talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is Tuesday the 13th of January, 9:05. You're very welcome along to another edition of The Greg Hughes Show here in Highland Radio. And it's another packed one. We've got Community Garda information coming up for you after 10 o'clock. We also have a celebration of Donegal's success at the Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition. We have a number of those who did us so proud. In fact, everyone who took part in it did us very proud indeed. But there are those two whose projects were selected for awards. So we're going to tap into that too. That's all coming up in the second hour. This hour, we've got loads coming up too, as you can imagine. We'll have a run through the papers in a moment. But just to remind you that it's great to have you listening to us in Radio Land. But maybe if you work at home or work in the home, you want to watch us as well as listen. Well, then you can go onto the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. It's on your smart stick or your Fire TV. Both of those exist, but you know what I mean, your Fire Stick or your smart TV. Hey, when all these crackdowns going on, maybe that's all the smart the Fire Stick will be useful for. But anyway, we'll see. 086 60 25000, WhatsApp and text, by the way. We love to hear anything that's going on in your life, anything you wish we should be talking about or you think we should be talking about, or pass on some messages of acts of goodwill or other experiences that you might have. You know the score. The lines are open for all of that stuff, as is usual. Let's see what is making the papers today. And ministers are to rush through laws that will allow companies, will allow companies misusing artificial intelligence to be hit with massive fines. This is in the Irish Independent. Note to self, do not put eye drops in just before you're about to read the papers, because everything then ends up blurred. Well, anyway, the law will set out 8 harmful issues of AI that contravene common values because they violate fundamental rights. It's not clear whether they will specifically address the nudification issues that have caused a furore over Elon Musk's Grok AI chatbot, although amendments can be made. It could mean fines running into the tens of thousands or millions of euro for large platforms found to be in breach. Now, this gets complicated, right? Because obviously, Grok does what Grok does, right? And it was putting primarily women into bikinis, and that's what the nudification is. Why is that wrong? Because they haven't given consent. If they want to post, or if anyone wants to post a picture of themselves in swimwear, men or women, that's completely up to them. The idea is that you shouldn't. It's a choice, right? And some people don't seem to get that, well, they posted pictures of themselves on Facebook. Why can't I put a bikini on them? Well, if you have to explain that to someone, you're in really dangerous territory, aren't you? But that being said, you can go into other AIs and do the exact same thing. You can search images on Google, and Google has pulled images from people's private social media. And if you put the right searches in, I'm sure you'll find what you're looking for. So they're opening up a can of worms here, because as soon as they start going after Grok, X, Elon Musk, gonna have to go after everyone. But obviously, what Elon Musk does, and he's very clever at this, he has pulled this into an attack on free speech and freedom of expression. So it's complicated. We're following up what the English are doing. They're doing the same, and that's what we're doing too. The Irish Daily Mail this morning: officials in the Department of Foreign Affairs advised against claiming that providing enhanced funding to the World Bank would lead to an enhanced national reputation for Ireland. So this is a continuation of this Pascal Donoghue story from yesterday. The Irish Daily Mail revealed at the weekend that then Minister for Finance Pascal Donoghue provided an extra 10 million to the World Bank beyond what it had requested in April last year. The World Bank recommended a contribution of 131.4 million from Ireland from 2025 to 28. However, Mr. Donoghue instead opted to provide it with an extra 10 million, 141.4 million, that on April 24th of this year, or last year actually. This despite officials in his department also having recommended less. The decision was taken several months before Mr. Donoghue quit his role in government and as the Fine Gael TD for Dublin Central to become managing director of the World Bank. The revelations in the Mail have prompted calls for Mr. Donoghue to appear before the Oireachtas Finance Committee to explain the decision. So, I mean, in the simplest terms, we don't need to break it down. It's so obvious. spend a month being really, really positive about another radio station or promoting them or saying how great they are, or you should go there and this, that and the other. And next thing you know, I leave here and I go and work there, right? That would stink to high heavens. This is our money. 10 million euro worth of your money gone to the World Bank. I'll Google what it's for. Next thing you know, the person who okayed that, despite his officials saying otherwise, ends up working for them. I'm not even sure if anything. It doesn't even matter. Well, it does matter if it's really dodgy, and I'm not saying is, but let's say it was. It's actually just really bad use of taxpayers' money. The Irish Times tells us that a prosecution is pending in relation to the murder of British agent Dennis Donaldson in Donegal almost 20 years ago. Remarkably, I can't believe it was almost 20 years ago. Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan disclosed yesterday that the Director of Public Prosecutions had told An Garda Síochána O'Connor to prosecute an individual for offences in this case, and proceedings are underway in this regard. The new development in the case was disclosed after Mr O'Callaghan met the Donaldson family yesterday to discuss the long-running investigation. Dennis Donaldson was a senior Sinn Féin official for many years. In 2005, he and others were arrested and accused of being part of a Republican spy ring based at Stormont. When the case against him collapsed, he was exposed as a long-standing British agent. There's a lot in that story. But obviously, if charges are pending, we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, a lot of negativity about our beef exports, with the Mercosur deal expected to be discussed by MEPs and voted on in the not too distant future. So it's good to see another market open, I should say reopen. The resumption of Irish beef exports to China will be important and positive for trade, the Taoiseach has claimed. Micheál Martin said it reflected the confidence in the robustness of Ireland's food safety standards. The Taoiseach had visited China last week and pressed for the market to be reopened for Irish beef products. He also met with China's President Xi Jinping, and also the chair of the of China's National People's Congress. So that's potentially good news. I'm not sure. It's a relatively small percentage, but still, the more markets, the better. And lastly, the Irish Sun tells us that Irish prisoners are living in the worst conditions across Europe. This is according to a human rights expert. And Chief Inspector of Prisons Mark Kelly will tell the Justice Committee today, lags, I love how the coppers and lags and the nick, these British tabloids with Irish titles, how they start using these terms. Do we use them? Maybe they use them in the capital or on the east, but they throw in these sort of really English words like lags, or maybe we use that word, but anyway. The prisons aren't great. Do you have any sympathy, I wonder? Apparently, finally, we've topped a list that people won't be too upset about. Irish prisons, Irish prison life, one of the worst in Europe. We're joined on the programme now by Kieran Sheridan, who's a SIPTA organiser. Kieran, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning, listeners.
Right. Now, members of your union who are workers as healthcare assistants in the HSE Home Support Service across Donegal, Clare, Cork and Kerry, and indeed Limerick, they've all voted overwhelmingly for strike action. So just so we're very clear about what area these people are working in, talk to that, if you don't mind, Kieran.
Yes, Greg, these are healthcare assistants working in the community, formerly would have been known as home helps are healthcare support assistants to provide vital services, day-to-day care, personal care. They're a vital cog in the wheel of the health service, from maybe looking at somebody getting discharged from an acute facility, as in Letterkenny University Hospital, or some other step-down facility where somebody can be cared for in their own home with the support of their families. So, like, they're a vital cog. They provide care in the home where people are comfortable and where people are the vast majority of people are happy if they can be cared for in the home. It's reluctant that we've had to take a ballot for strike or industrial action. We've been engaging for at least 6 years now at this stage, 8 years, Greg, apologies, to ensure that our members are treated in a fair and equitable manner with other healthcare workers.
Kieran, am I correct in saying that this isn't about any new agreement. This is about the implementation of a previous agreement.
Yes, Greg, I think that's vital. Yes, in industrial relations, there will always be disagreements. And we've agreed you always utilise the state mechanism and the Workplace Relations Commission are a vital cog. And they do mediation or conciliation, and invariably there's an agreement signed up. We've had numerous national agreements in place going back many years, but for whatever reason, the HSE in Donegal are reneging on those, and particularly about underpayments and also outsourcing of work. But if I go back to the underpayments, this is overtime rates. And I go back to COVID, Greg, and I think this is very, very important information for the listeners. If we go back to March 20, and even before March 20, nobody knew about COVID. They didn't know what they were dealing with. There was shortages of PPE. We had no vaccinations. Our members put shoulder to the wheel and went beyond the call of duty and took on additional hours. And now they're not being paid for those hours, despite national agreements in place. And it's shocking. So it is.
When you talk of outsourcing of work, right, I mean, there are different models, correct me if I'm wrong, Kieran, in different areas within the HSC. Some areas are more reliant on private services, others it's more in-house. Is there a move away from home care being provided in-house in our HSC region? Is that what the outsourcing of work is a reference to or what?
It's our members' opinion that that is definitely on the agenda, because we've worked very hard in Donegal. And I must reiterate, Greg, our row isn't with local management in Donegal as in home support. We've worked very well around rosters and contracts, but our members are available for work, or we've people who come into employment and low hour contracts who are happy to take on additional work. But these new care packages are going to private operators in certain areas, despite national agreements to the contrary, that and commitments by the HSE that has directly employed HSE staff in the first instance. So we think it's been done in a Machiavellian manner. We know it's been done in a Machiavellian manner. It's people with budget strings, because if you're being honest, you know, the easiest thing for the HSE is to outsource the work. So it is. It's outsourced to a private operator, but you're not dealing with the day-to-day issues. You're not dealing with staff. You're not dealing with families. You know, you just write the check and hand it over.
Is this not a national HSE funding issue, though? Because there was a large swathe of last year where the money effectively ran out for additional home care packages or home help, and that was one of the struggles we were having.
Yeah, but if you look at, I think it's on the media recently has been delays in Letterkenny University Hospital and there. And it's very easy to criticise management in Letterkenny, but there's probably people medically discharged who can be cared for in their homes, but our members can provide the care. But for whatever reason, there's delay in approving the funding or approving those packages, be it directly employed or not directly employed. There are delays. We have the members. We want to provide good, well-paid, proper jobs in Donegal. This is Donegal, so it is. These are well-paid, well-looked after. We want people retained in Donegal, directly employed HSE jobs. It's vital for the economy of Donegal, so it is.
Yeah, no, and I do understand that relationship. So just from SIPDU's perspective then, help me here. We've been covering recently the fact that 340 people are either awaiting home care packages to get out of hospital, get back into the community, or additional hours. Are you saying that the workers are there, but the funding isn't there? Or the hours aren't being given, or the right contracts aren't being given?
I think it's probably a combination of everything. We have workers who joined the HSE on 20-hour contracts. We've been advocating for many years now, you know, for a 39-hour contract, but that hasn't been action. And I don't know, is it a fear on the HSE? It's obviously local management haven't got the funding to provide those jobs, and they're doing their best, and they're taking on people in low-hour contracts. So, like, if you look at the cost of care, and you'll hear, you know, the HSE operate, they look at a bed night, and they'll say a bed night in Letterkenny University Hospital is X amount of money. You're talking in the hundreds, if not thousands of euro per night, and then you compare that to a home care package in the community. Like, I'm not an economist or anything, but there's value for money there. never mind the personal aspect. Where do people want to be cared for? They want to be cared for at home, if possible. Not everybody can be cared for at home, but cared for at home, if possible, by those in the community that they know and the trust, and they have confidence in the care that can be provided.
Am I correct in saying as well, too, like, I used to work in the pubs and restaurants and stuff, and I used to hate when I was scheduled for a split shift, right? So you'd work 4 hours in the morning, 4 hours in the evening. That's par for the course for many caregivers, isn't it? Whereby their working days split up into many different parts of the day. So in other words, they come home with a certain amount of money, but very much of the day is tied up with the commitment to work.
Yeah, look, we're part of a national ballot. The one thing in Donegal, for the most of our workers, rostering isn't an issue.
Okay.
We do 7/14, and that's by agreement and by choice. And it works well.
Actually, just by coincidence, a text come in here. I'm one of those workers who voted for strike action. Rosters require us to work multiple separate periods in a single day. It's ridiculous. But you're saying that's not a widespread problem up here?
No, there are. That's not a widespread. Yes, there are nuances, but there are issues that do need to be tidied up locally. Mm. But the vast majority of our members in Donegal are happy with the rostering arrangements, in fairness, Greg.
Okay, so what is the impact here in terms of, you know, people are listening here wondering at what point might the home help not land at the house? They do incredibly important work. And I suppose that's why the last resort is strike action, because then we start to sort of maybe appreciate that. So when is this action scheduled for, and what might it look like?
Well, first of all, we'll be giving 3 weeks' notice to the employer. That'll be happening today. We are obliged under, you know, because we are a health service, and the most important person in this is the clients, the people at home that we care for. Our issue isn't with those. We'd be optimistic and hopeful that the HSC, through the auspice of the WRC, do invite us to talk to thrash this out and resolve it once and for all. But I must reiterate, our strike committee will be meeting in the very near future to decide what form of action. Now, initially, action may be decided to have the biggest impact on the HSE management / admin side of the thing, compared to continues to provide care. Because again, we want to provide care. Our members, you know, they built a relationship. They're advocates. It's vocational. You talk to any of them, they build up a relationship, and they'll say, "How can I leave, you know, client A, client B? They're in need this, they need, you know, they're a double assist. It may be palliative care, you know, like it's phenomenal." Talk to any family that has been in receipt of the service, and they'll always speak highly of them. It's relationship, it's beyond the call of duty. It's, as I say, it's vocational in nature. So
yeah, but that can't be, we can't exploit that either. You see, that's unfortunately, that's what happens in nursing, in teaching, and in this space, because, you know, sometimes I'm concerned that we try and exploit that when we shouldn't. We should be rewarding that.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? I'd call it the Florence Nightingale syndrome, that the HSE are gambling as if they say, you know, these people won't pull the pin. And it's not. We're not talking language like that. We're open to talks. We hope we're invited in before D-Day arrives, but we won't be found wanting, ensuring that our members will resolve their issue this time once and for all.
Okay.
We're not coming back again.
Thank you
for
that. Understood. Kieran Sheridan, who's SIPDU organiser, 086 60 25,000. I'd be very interested in actually hear directly from carers themselves. We did have one or two messages in so far, but, you know, what's your view on all of that? Home care, those that provide home care packages, home care assistance effectively is the phraseology. You know, what's it like? You don't have to come on air. You can give us an insight, right, and retain your anonymity. There's no issue in that regard. So you can WhatsApp or text us or give us a call on 07491 25,000. I know for a fact it would be the very last resort to not go in and provide the great care that you do. So it must be getting very serious. On the issue of social media, dear Greg, people leaving social media has increased this year. I myself have left a lot of social media, barring WhatsApp, which I keep for family and friends groups, chats, etc. I found since leaving social media, it has vastly improved instead of it being called social media. It should be called anti-social media. My life has improved since leaving social media. My relationship with social media is a very positive one. I don't use X anymore because it's an absolute cesspit. And I'm not a snowflake and I'm not woke and I'm not left. I just don't really enjoy it. I go on for a nose, but that'd be the height of it. Facebook, I love Facebook. I've a fantastic connection to people that listen to this show and others. I think it's a great honour for me to be able to spread news and information and what have you and get feedback. And I genuinely love Facebook and I love the people that I interact with there. It's a fantastic situation. It might be unique. It might be my unique experience. I don't know. But I find it a very positive experience. After that, Instagram. It's not that I'm very tech savvy, right? I just don't really enjoy Instagram. And what else is there? Obviously, Snapchat and WhatsApp, depending on who you're in contact with. But yep, X out of my life pretty much completely, unless I'm having a nose. I do really enjoy the whole Facebook environment. But I do note that some people take Facebook as real life in terms of that's their connection with the outside world. And it is problematic because it's not a connection in that way. Do you know what I mean? Some people live their life there. Whereas I live my life in the real world, and that's part of it and a fantastic part for me. Let's go to John now. John, we are talking home help. What did you text into us?
John, Craig, it was down to, suppose I have home help that comes into relatives of my own, and I've been doing it for years, and I can't hold them high enough on what work to do. And Kieran, what was saying about the workers is great. The fact is that the HSE management isn't doing their job. Mm. The point I'm getting at is that quite a few of them are on contract hours, 32, 34, 36 hours, and quite a lot of them aren't doing their hours, yet they want to do them, but they're getting paid for doing them, but they're not fully doing them. And yet all the people are crying out for home help, and these people want to do their job, and for some reason HSE are not giving them the full hours to do in the week.
So they're getting paid for the full hours but aren't being given the jobs to do to fill those hours. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Yeah. That's bad management, yes.
Isn't it, in any organisation if that were to be the case?
It seems to be, and yet and all, the cry is now that they want to get more and more workers on and to home help. That's fine, because the people is there is crying out for home help. Yet and all, let the people do that's getting contract hours, let them do their full hours. They want to do them.
Doesn't make sense.
Or they wouldn't have taken on the contract to do it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Listen, thanks so much for that insight. We're going to stay with health now and go to Betty Holmes, who's chair of Donegal Action for Cancer Care. Good morning to you, Betty. Lovely to see you. Lovely to speak to you, I should say. I don't have the pleasure of seeing you. Right, okay. Now, obviously, we are hopefully making great progress in terms of cancer care in the Northwest here. The surgical hub is progressing, we hope, and we're going to keep a strong eye on that. But we also do have to talk about the here and now and the experience of some. And we've learned that 4 breast cancer patients have had their surgeries cancelled. We're told mostly down to the lack of bed capacity. I cannot imagine what it must be like, Betty, for someone to receive a diagnosis and then expect the next stage of their healthcare to kick in, only to be told surgery is being cancelled. And 4 women affected by this. Very troubling.
Greg, it's really, really concerning. And I suppose at the start of this, can we just take a wee minute to think on those 4 ladies and their family? The stress that they must be going through from your initial diagnosis, the journey that they've went through that, then they've had their surgery date, and then to be told your surgery's cancelled. I just can't imagine, and I would hope that they won't consider this interview to be any way sort of not thinking on them, but we must
make
sure that
this never happens again. The whole idea we invited you on, Betty, was for these 4 women. That's the reason, to try and put the pressure on the HSE to ensure that people aren't treated like this. But I take your point. How can something like this happen?
Greg, I mean, the reality is
How can something like this happen?
It shouldn't have happened. And it can't happen again, Greg. And, I mean, the reality is their cancer surgeries were cancelled. And the impact that has to have on the patient and their outcomes, remember, because of their surgeries delayed. And you can't imagine just what they're all going through. And the reality is it can't be allowed to happen again. And we must get beds ring-fenced at Letterkenny University Hospital. And I actually looked up early this morning, the National Cancer Control Programme. The 8 designated hospitals in Ireland have ring-fenced beds for their cancer patients. Mm. Now, Letterkenny University Hospital is a satellite of Galway Hospital. So why can't we have ring-fenced beds at Letterkenny Hospital for our breast cancer patients and other patients, cancer patients if needed? Mm. And the reality is we must take this on board. And we had actually written to the Minister for Health, and we must acknowledge the great input that she has had in support for Letterkenny Hospital with the new centre and all the rest of it. But we'll be writing to her, and we'll also be writing to the National Cancer Control Programme, insisting that Letterkenny University Hospital must have 5 or 8 ring-fenced beds as part of their attachment as a satellite unit to Galway University Hospital. This can't be allowed to happen again, Greg.
Yeah, I mean, it's awful that we find ourselves in the situation that we have surgeons that are the best in Ireland, some of the best in the world, and they want to, I'm mm-hmm. sure, they want to give these women the best outcome as they possibly can, to get in there and do exactly what they're so expert in doing so. But they can't do it. And I believe there's a mix of cases in both Donegal and Galway in this cohort of 4 women. Yes. They can't do it because of the lack of beds. I mean, that's unbelievable in this day and age. We've got the skills.
It's unbelievable, Greg.
We don't
yes.
have the beds.
Three of the patients are Letterkenny University Hospital patients, and one of the patients was to have a surgery in Galway this week, and that was cancelled. It can't be allowed to happen again, and we must focus on the fact that surgery, breast cancer surgery, was cancelled. And the reality is, you know, the patient is very, very vulnerable, but also their lives depend on their surgery, and that shouldn't get lost in a break. And I know I don't want to sort of take away from it, but we have a new community hospital across the road. And if I remember rightly, when Stephen Donnelly was up, that was to be completed at the start or mid-2026. So we hear nothing about what's happening with that. And that might move some patients across the road. But we must, as part of Donegal Action for Cancer Care, we will be writing to the Minister for Health. We will ask her to mandate a new strategy to ring fence 5 or 8 beds for cancer surgery so that patients can have their cancer surgery, because their surgery impacts their life and their life can depend on it.
We know there are certain areas of the health service where there are deficit stories that come up time and again. Mm-hmm. Non-urgent operations, overcrowding in the ED, stuff yeah. like that. We shouldn't become accustomed to it, but we can. I don't recall hearing this number of breast cancer operations, life-saving potentially breast cancer operations being cancelled. Does this happen often?
No, this to our knowledge, this is the first time this has happened, Greg.
Mm.
Now, there may have been in the past surgeries may have been postponed or something, but that's usually sort of medical reasons to do with the patient or whatever. But never ever in DACC, you'll be on the go as 20 years or 21 now in April, and this is the first time we have had this.
Which it should
be pointed
out,
this
is under the current health minister's watch as well, so I hope she takes an interest in this. So sorry,
well,
could you
as
just...
Well, as I said, we wrote to her last yeah. Tuesday morning.
That's grand.
Because
yep.
a patient contacted us on Monday night, Greg.
Mm.
We haven't had heard anything back, which is quite unusual as well.
Okay.
Can
you tell me the difference...
tight on it.
Sorry, it's not my intention to cut across you, Betty. What is the difference between
them?
What is the difference between a cancer surgery being postponed versus cancelled then? Because you say we've heard of postponements, these are cancellations. That doesn't mean these surgeries will never happen, surely.
Well, what you're told is that they'll be put on the next list.
Right.
Okay. But the reality is, when will the next list happen? And remember, patients as well, Greg, before they've had their surgery, they usually go through a whole process and they usually have their chemotherapy. And then all that has to be done within a certain timeline so that it impacts their I'll just say, their survival rate, you know? It can't happen, Greg. It's unreal, and it's quite scary and quite upsetting. And definitely our thoughts and prayers go out to the four cancer patients and their families.
Betty Holmes, thank you for that. Betty Holmes, Chair of Donegal Action for Cancer Care. And whilst I also accept fully that the Health Minister has taken a particular interest, it would seem, in cancer services in Donegal, we do have this surgical hub coming down the line. That doesn't give anyone a pass, though, from our perspective, I'm sure anyone else's, in relation to what's happening in the here and now. Four women have been told that their surgeries have been cancelled and that they are being put on the next list. They don't know when those surgeries might happen. If, and not to in any way exploit your situation, if you are one of those people affected, I would be very keen to get your voice out there if possible. We're going to get on to the Health Minister. As I say, this has happened under her watch. It's never happened before as far as we can determine. And as I say, fantastic, doing sterling work in relation to getting this surgical hub off the ground, saying all the right things. But we are about the here and now, and we're going to have to get some answers for these four women. And it's not just those, you know yourself, the partners, the mums, the dads, the children. This affects an awful lot of people. It cannot be allowed to happen. It should not be allowed to happen. And we're going to contact the minister directly, as much as directly as we can. We don't have her mobile number so effectively, but we will try and get answers there. Emma, thank you for
Hello.
Joining me. We're talking bed capacity. Hi, Emma.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Greg.
Right, what's your situation, Emma?
I was on the school run there and I was just listening to your show and the lady came on from the Cancer Society and I can't believe that we're 5 years down the road and the same behaviour's gone on in Letterkenny.
Right.
I was diagnosed with bowel cancer at the age of 41.
My word.
And my surgery is cancelled in Letterkenny, not once, but four times. Keeping in mind it was 2021, so I was isolating away from my family, my three young kids and my husband. I just know what them cancellations done to us. And it took my husband to sit in that hospital for almost 4 hours one day until he got a date for me. Like, people shouldn't have to fight for care.
Can you help us get into the brain space, Emma? So, I mean, I presume this diagnosis for a 41-year-old, any age but 41, young family, right? Absolute
knocks
shocking.
Knocks you completely off your feet.
Yeah, I presume.
I'm a nurse. It just took me by surprise. I was there going, oh my God, what? I'm 41. I've got three small kids. Majority of women that have breast cancer are aged in the 40 to 55 age group. So obviously have families. It just, it stopped our lives and our tracks. Like, COVID was massive, but that was far bigger for us to deal with. Bigger than any epidemic, because it was probably a fracture in our family, because we didn't, the unsurety of your care, your health. But to think of the people that you are putting your life in, and they have no problem phoning you the morning prior to an operation or the morning after an operation and saying, well, sorry, your operation's not going ahead.
Now, I want to understand.
You're not important. Your health's not important.
I want to understand what it feels like to get that call, because I presume you've built up to it. You're reassuring the children if they're old enough. Look, mommy's going to be okay.
Well, when you see the number coming up, you just automatically, you're like, for me, the first time it was, okay, this can happen.
Mm.
But like the second, the third, the fourth time, I was in tears when that administrator phoned me and said my operation wasn't going ahead. Because as far as I was concerned, I had an alien inside me that somebody needed to dig out and I couldn't do it. The surgeon was the only person who could remove it. And I wasn't important enough for them to make sure that there was a bed for my surgery.
And when you say you were isolating like your family, you quite literally were isolating from your family as well too. So God knows how you kept your head straight.
Because, it was mental. Like, it was torture. Like, I had to tell my youngest child, who was only 3 at the time, that I was on holidays. Imagine telling your 3-year-old you're on holidays for 7.5 weeks.
Yeah, okay.
You know, yeah, the health board don't take into consideration the impact that they have. It's not just the patient. It's everybody around that patient that's infected.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's a phone call. They don't realise the impact of the mental health impact it gives to you, because you're sitting waiting.
Yeah,
you know, they would take me down for the COVID test, because I had to be COVID test every time I was getting my pre-op. I'd done that 4 times. And on my way back from Letterkenny, each time they cancelled my surgery for the next morning.
Okay, Emma, listen,
you know,
thanks so
much. They have to seriously look at the situation of bed management.
Yeah.
Like, if you're putting somebody on a surgical list, you need to be fit to block off a bed for that.
Yeah, they need to be ring-fenced, don't they? That's the logical thing to do. It does happen in other hospitals.
They have to be prioritised.
Yeah, okay.
Like, this is not elective surgery we're talking about. We're talking about possibly life-saving surgery, depending on the type of cancer these people have.
And I think elective surgery, too, is a bit of a misnomer, because I think people think that's an ingrown toenail, but a lot of it actually can be very, very important. Mm. But elective sounds like you're choosing to do it. But I do understand the distinction.
No. Elective means that it may not be as urgent as some other surgeries.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's not the fact that it could be just an ingrown hair or ingrown toenail. It could be make a massive difference to that individual.
Okay, Emma. I don't want to pry, but I hope you're healthy and happy now.
Well, I am what I am, and I'm facing it. But
okay,
as a result of my experience in Letterkenny, I've never been a patient in it again.
Unfortunately, I hear that from a lot of
my family.
People.
I had to remove all my family from it, and it is my local hospital, so we no longer get treated in Letterkenny.
Right. Okay.
And the staff, the staff's amazing in it. I'm not saying anything against them. It's the management, it's the running of it. It's incompetently run. And that's the bottom line.
Okay.
And I just hope them four ladies have good support. And just tell them, keep at it, keep ringing.
Yeah, but the thing
the
is...
The baby that cries the loudest gets the first bottle.
Yeah,
we shouldn't have to fight for it.
No, but the thing is, everyone's there ready to do it, as far as I can determine. The surgeons are there, you know, the will is there, the want is there. This is because someone can't manage beds. It's got nothing to, you know what I mean? And that's crazy, like, it's crazy.
That's what I'm saying. The staff, I didn't leave because of the staff. I left because of the management, because they can't manage the hospital currently.
Okay,
like,
Emma.
If you have somebody coming in for life-saving surgery, you make sure you have an ICU bed for them or a high-dependency bed. It's not rocket science. It's plain and simple. When a discharge goes out, that bed's manned.
A caller says here, just Emma, this will give you some insight into the current experience, because one of those affected, someone close to the mass, contacted us. My mother-in-law was one of the ladies who was due to have breast cancer surgery on the 6th of January. She travelled to Letterkenny in snow to be reviewed the day before, to have the operation cancelled later that afternoon. And this is the kicker. This is what pen pushers don't understand. This lady's also a carer for her husband and had respite booked that week. So she effectively took a week off from being a carer, had to schedule that, if it can put it to you like that, to get this, to keep her going. And then it's cancelled. I mean, that's what we're talking about there.
But when they were cancelling that, they never thought of that woman and that situation. They never asked, number one, so they didn't know.
Yeah.
That every other system had to change to accommodate her operation, but yet and all they could cancel it in less than 12 hours. So there's where my problem is. They need to address the management of their beds. There'd be a lot of people getting their surgeries if they could manage beds better.
Right, okay.
But it's a vicious circle. If you go back to your home health situation, if they were being treated better, that system would be working better. And your discharges would run more smoothly.
I just would love to have absolute faith, Emma, that if we had tons of capacity in the community and tons of home care help, that in some way this would magically fix every issue in LUH. I hope it would, right? But sometimes I do wonder if, you know, that's if we'd still have the problems, but for a different reason. But I'm being very cynical and sceptical, and I shouldn't be. Emma, listen, best wishes to you. A caller says, hi, Greg, I had breast cancer in 2014 and my operation was cancelled 3 times before I got to bed. So, yes, it is still going on. OK, we're not finished with that topic, of course. We'll try and get back to it tomorrow. It's incredibly important, and it's very much to support the four women, their families, and to ensure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. So, hi, Greg. I was a home help worker on a 10-hour contract. I absolutely loved the work and all my wee clients, but every week was so stressful, wondering would I get enough hours having a family, and the usual bills forced me to have to leave and go get a job in the hospital on a 39-hour contract as I had stability. That's 3 years ago now, and I still miss the home care just as much. It's a wonderful job and you build so many friendships with clients and their families, which is a story we hear quite regularly. I got a full knee replacement in August. I live alone and I'm 73 years of age. They put me into a nursing home for 2 weeks that cost over €1,000 a week. It would have been cheaper for them to get home help for me. I had to pay another week myself that cost €1,100 as I had to stay and only 2 weeks were covered. I wanted meals on wheels, as you're not supposed to stand on your knee after your operation. They told me that by the time I'd filled out the forms, my 2 weeks of meals on wheels would be over anyway. I still think that home help would have worked best. I'm looking for help the past 3 months, but no one wants to do it. Is that that you've been given? I'm not really sure the ins and outs of it, but I understand. Is that you've been given an allowance for it and you're trying to source it privately, but you can't find that? Is that what you're saying? Greg, last week I got an injection in the hospital for a health issue I have. Between my arrival at the hospital getting the jab done or getting the job done, I was less than an hour. I got a bill this morning for the hospital. €329 for the bed, and the doctor was €118. It's no wonder our hospital service is crippled. If I didn't have private healthcare, I simply couldn't afford to pay this bill. Highland Radio, one of the problems could be a split shift. People are only asked to work the couple of night hours at night, nothing else for that day, hence people aren't staying. Well, I did raise the split shift situation with SIPTU, and he said that that didn't seem to be a particular problem. Another caller says, when are we going to admit the HSE is broken beyond repair? The opposition parties have no viable alternative, which is why they never go after it politically. Interesting point. Another, I'm a carer. I think it's all very rushed in and out to houses to get to the next patient. It can feel rushed. And, you know, people then, you have to think if they've got a number of visits and they don't want to rush out because they know the person is looking at them saying, you're the last person I'm going to see today. But if you stay there an extra 10, 20, 30 minutes, then you're delayed getting to the next person. And if you do the same there, you're delayed getting to the next person. It must be terrible to be in a job where all you want to do is care for people, but you're so much on the clock that you leave feeling that you haven't been able to do what you want to do. And that's not fair because the people are there that want to do what they want to do, and we're not allowing them, paying them, rewarding them, giving the time to do that. And that's a problem.